transition here into our second hour, I'd like to share an email. I'm going to share it anonymously so that there is no indication whatsoever of the individual who sent me this email. I do know the there's a woman, I guess, so that cuts the population by 50%, whose husband I do know. And she asked two questions. Actually, she asked three questions, and I'm going to read her email, and then I'm going to not only share what I shared with her, but also elaborate, because I'm quite sure that there's others that have similar questions. Hopefully not anyone that has read any significant amount of yadayah.com, questioningpaul.com, or intro2god.org. But nonetheless, the reality is that in the West, particularly in countries where English is the predominant language, in New Zealand, Australia, the United States, much of Canada, England, and even in places throughout Europe, Christianity has been pervasive. Now, it's on a rapid retreat. It's a huge diminishment in the number of, Christians, particularly Roman Catholic and Orthodox Christians. And those that are Christians are now becoming more and more nominal Christians, which means that, they'll kind of give some lip service to it, but they are pretty ostracized from the religion. So there is a legacy of this religion that changes and corrupts people's thinking. So that's why these questions are important. And I should say that, well, I find myself mimicking Yosha's response to this. And I'm going to apologize in advance for it, because it's appropriate for him. It's not appropriate for me. And when Yosha was asked most questions, when people, you know, ask for physical healing, for example, as opposed to spiritual knowledge, and even when they asked for knowledge and those questions were already answered, he said, "No, why are you asking me this?" And he could only endure so much of it. And he, on every case, after he would endure a little bit of it, and every time he said, "Why are you asking me this? Why is this what you want? Why don't you understand? Why don't you read? The answer has been given to us on all of these questions. Why do you want me to answer these questions when the answer exists right there for you?" And the other part of it is that beyond the kind of a frustration that exists is they always wanted, and you could just tell from the tone of the questions, they wanted Yosha to give a quick answer. And a quick answer is always a bad idea, particularly on something as important as knowing the supreme creator of the universe, who he is, what he's like, what he wants, what he's offering, and how to benefit. A quick answer will almost always forestall a person's growth, their understanding, and therefore their ability to make a good decision. And so Yosha said, a comprehensive answer to every important question. All of these issues are resolved, in the Torah. Why not just go there? So I want to apologize in advance. I'm going to take a bit of the attitude of, why don't you listen to what God has to say? Why are you asking me? All right, so here's the letter. "Dear Yada, I have a couple of questions that would help us understand the overall truth. Would you be willing to send us to the appropriate text or give an answer?" Now, I do want to intervene here in this letter and say that that's something I don't very often see that I would strongly encourage, which is, would you send us the appropriate text to answer the question? What she's saying is, I want to know God's view on this. When you say, I want to have the access to the appropriate text. So that's a really, really good start. And now, for someone to put together all of the text necessary to answer the three questions that are following, Niyawa answers those questions, and, you know, it requires set in R format, about 1,000 pages in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and even then, there's so much to the words and so much to making connections and understanding them. I mean, you could write a million pages based upon what Yahweh has to say in his text, the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, on these questions. So this idea of, or just give us an answer, what I'm going to do here is provide an answer, at least the proper perspective, hopefully. First question. What is the ultimate purpose for Yahusha coming to live among us for 33 years? If Christians believe that his dying provides their salvation and atonement for their sins, but you believe that we are saved by observance of the Torah, then what is the purpose of the short stay on earth, and what is our relationship to be with him? As in Yahusha. Now, there's another paragraph and another question that follows, but most of this is going to deal with the first question. Yahweh answered your first question in the Torah regarding the covenant, regarding Abraham and Yitzhak on Mount Moriah. And through his prophets, he shared everything we need to know about the purpose of Yahusha, a greatly diminished manifestation of Yahweh saving his covenant children. Now, before I go on, what do I mean by that? That Yahweh answered the question, what was the ultimate purpose for Yahusha coming to live among us? You know, if Christians believe that God died for their salvations, you know, and you believe that observing the Torah is the answer to salvation, what was the purpose of Yahusha being with us? Well, Yahweh's first answer there appears in the Torah, in the first book, in Bereshith, when Abraham took Yitzhak, the first child of the covenant, to Mount Moriah to sacrifice his only son. In harmony with Yahweh's instructions on the matter. And when Yahweh said, here, I will provide the sacrifice, and you have the Passover lamb there provided for the purpose of having the child of the covenant live. The answer is provided right there. The diminished manifestation of Yahweh, the corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, serves as the Pesach lamb. It's explained right there. And through his prophets, he then provided everything we need to know. Psalm 22, Psalm 88, Yeshayah 53, provides a detailed account of did on Pesach on our behalf, and then did on Matzah, which was even more important, concluding with the reunification of the soul and spirit of Yahweh and Yahusha on firstborn children. It's all laid out for us. All you really need to know is what the name Yahusha means. Yahweh saving. And then there is no distinction. Why would you have a relationship with the diminished manifestation when you can meet and know the entirety of God, Yahweh? Next, Yahusha answered your question. in his initial and most extensive public declaration. Read Matthew, Matanya, 5 through 7. Yosha began. I mean, his first and largest, most extensive, largest audience, most extensive in terms of length, declaration, by far, is what's known as the Sermon on the Mount. It's a revelation that Christians abhor, because everything he said is completely destructive of their religion. It says that the Torah endures, that the Torah is the gift of Yahweh, that no aspect of the Torah is going to be annulled, that Yosha is there to fulfill the Torah. He was Torah observant. He's the living embodiment of the Torah, honoring Yahweh's Torah promises on behalf of the covenant's children. He lays everything out, talking about how the Torah itself provides that narrow and unpopular doorway to life. And while the broad path of man, religion, the broadest of which is Christianity, the most popular of which leads to the death and destruction of the soul. Yosha explained it all in what's called the Sermon on the Mount. All presented in the first book of the so-called Christian New Testament, right at the beginning of the first book. So Yosha answers the question. A question that we ought not ask, because it's answered. It's answered in the first book that Yahweh revealed in Bereshit, the first book of the Torah, and it's answered in the first declaration of Yosha in the first of the eyewitness accounts, Matanya. If you would like to know even more about what Yahweh has conveyed on this matter as to why Yosha was with us, much of what he had to say is translated and analyzed in questioningpaul.com, yadaya.com, and introtogod.org. Now, I had much more to say, and we're going to continue to review the answer to these first two questions when Shattering Myth continues after the break. So we're continuing to analyze these two questions. They're related questions. What is the ultimate purpose for Yosha coming to live among us for 33 years? If Christians believe that his dying provides their salvation and atonement for their sins, but you believe that they are saved through the observance of the Torah, then what is the purpose of his short stay on earth, and what is our relationship with him? So I wrote, it's always a bad idea to provide or accept a quick answer. But simply stated, he came to fulfill, which is to accept, to honor, to facilitate, and to enable the promises he made in the Torah regarding the covenant by way of observing and attending his first four invitations to be called out and to meet. That was his purpose in coming. He made promises regarding these invitations relative to his covenant children, and he honored those promises. Had he not done so, he would have been unreliable, dishonest. There'd be no way to know him, no way to engage in a relationship with him, no way to be saved by him. He made a promise, he honored his promise. He talks the talk, he walks the walk. Your second question, I wrote, is troubling for many reasons. It jumps directly to salvation, bypassing knowing Yahweh and developing a relationship with him. It reflects the backwards and inverted view of Christianity. It is a senseless and selfish notion that permeates the religion. This idea of, I want to know if I'm saved. I want to know how to be saved. By whom? For what purpose? I mean, why would you want to... It's kind of like saying, you know, I want to have sex with somebody before I get to know them. I want to marry someone that I have never met. It's just ridiculous. Why would God want to spend eternity with somebody who's fixated on him saving them as opposed to getting to know him? It's selfish. It's senseless. It's ridiculous. That's why Christianity is so upside down. It just perverts our perspective. Well, most of us had our perspective corrupted by Christianity prior to coming to know Yahweh. It is something you'll have to jettison over time to embrace the truth. I was talking to a good friend about cleaning the crud of Christianity from my mind, my mindset, my perspective. And it's an ongoing process. I mean, I may be 80 or 90% of the way there. But most of us grew up in a society heavily influenced by Christianity. You know, its New Testament was considered the Bible and the Word of God. Pauline doctrine absolutely permeates the church. And as such, we're all stained by it. I mean, it's not something that, you know, one day you wake up and you say, I am now completely resolved. I am completely free of all of the negative and corruptive and malignant aspects of Christianity. No, it takes time. You know, Yahweh says, walk away from your country, from that culture, from Babylon. And Babylon is the basis of Christianity. And he didn't say that you have to completely and totally and instantly disassociate it from all of this, that you have to immediately and totally jettison everything that is associated with your country, with its culture, with its religion, with Babylon. It'd be impossible for us. It's a process. To walk is to move gradually, at a steady pace, upright. So he asks us to walk away from these things. I'm still walking away. Hey, doing the research for Question Paul was a huge benefit in this regard. But until I did that, I was not aware that there was no such thing as a renewed covenant. That's a, therefore, no New Testament. That's a Christian myth that permeated my life, even after I came to know who Yahweh is and what he was offering us. I had to cleanse the concept of a renewed covenant from my thought processes. There is none. And there's so many other aspects of Christianity that you have to do away with. And one of them is this fixation on Yahusha, even if you know his name. Welcome back to Sharing This. We're addressing the question, what is the ultimate purpose for Yahusha coming to live among us for 33 years? If Christians believe that his dying provides their salvation and atonement for their sins, but you believe that we are saved through observance of the Torah, then what is the purpose of his short stay on earth, and what is our relationship with him? During the break, Scott mentioned that would you rather have the whole cake, or would you prefer to have a crumb from the cake that fell on the floor? Put another way, and I know this will sound crude to someone who is still fixated on the Christian Jesus Christ, but would you, if you had an opportunity to choose between having a relationship with your real father and getting to know a toenail clipping from your father, which would you choose? Well, the toenail clipping came from your real father. The crumb came from the cake. They are of the same substance. It's just that they are hugely diminished aspects of that substance set apart from the individual or cake. Exactly what Yahusha is. He is a hugely, you know, the speed of light times the speed of light diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Why would you focus on him when he's pointing you to the Father? Why would anybody in their right mind try to come to know and relate to Yahusha when he is simply representing Yahweh? And that comparison between the individual father and a toenail clipping isn't as extreme as the difference is between Yahweh and Yahusha. You know, the problem with Christianity is it has created this caricature, this Jesus Christ that has no resemblance whatsoever to the actual individual, and then has created the notion that he is God and the totality of God and that he should be worshipped. And nothing could be further from the truth. This is all a legacy of Christianity. Now, I went on to say, the proper order of things is to first come to know Yahweh. I'm speaking now of why the Christian view is backwards, upside down. It's senseless and selfish to ask about salvation prior to asking about relationship. You know, it's like marrying somebody you haven't even met. The proper order of things is to first come to know Yahweh as he revealed himself in the Hebrew Torah. Second, come to understand what he wants, what he is offering, and what he expects from us as it is shared in the Torah. Third, engage, acting upon the terms and conditions of the covenant. Fourth, as part of this process, become and remain Torah observant, which is to closely examine and carefully consider what Yahweh revealed. Fifth, and as part of this engagement, answer Yahweh's 7 invitations to be called out and meet each year. This relationship with Yahweh through his covenant by way of his Torah results in eternal life, in perfection, in adoption, enrichment, and empowerment, all in his presence. That's the right order of things. Get to know him. Come to understand who he is, what he wants, what he's offering, how to capitalize upon it. And then act in accordance with those instructions, that guidance. And when you have done that, what you will find yourself doing, the process of doing that has you being observant of his Torah, closely examining and carefully considering it. It has you answering his invitations to meet 7 times a year. And it has you naturally, as a direct consequence of being a child of the covenant, receiving all of the benefits. And the benefits are substantially beyond salvation. Salvation is just a tiny aspect of the entire benefit we receive as a result of engaging in the covenant. Now, I went on to write, and this is really important. What Christians believe is errant, and it is irrelevant. And she wrote, if Christians believe, you know, that God died for their sins, the Christian Jesus Christ is not God. The real God did not and cannot die. So the basis of your comparison is invalid. Moreover, what I believe is irrelevant. All that matters is what Yahweh said and did. Now this drives to the heart of the issue. There is absolutely no distinction between Yahusha and his Torah. They are the same. The Torah is the word of Yahweh, as is Yahusha. Yahusha was absolutely and completely Torah observant. How is it that you are missing the connection between Yahusha and his participation in Passover, unyeasted bread, firstborn children, and 7 Sabbaths, as well as the connection between these invitations and the very benefits of the covenant? Yahusha is the Torah. You know, the Torah is a manifestation of Yahweh in our midst. And it's not even a significantly diminished manifestation of Yahweh because the Hebrew words are infinite in time. And because the insights gleaned from it and the benefits from the Torah are infinite in every possible respect, enrichment and empowerment, life and perfection, eternal relationship in the covenant as God's child, an eternal inheritance. The eternal God chose his Torah to introduce himself to us. He and his Torah are one. Yahusha is the Torah incarnate, a corporeal manifestation of the Torah. It's like he walked right out of the pages of the Torah. He represents the Torah. He affirmed the Torah. He was wholly and completely Torah observant. He directed our attention to the Torah to make a distinction between salvation through a God dying and salvation through the Torah. Is to say that one has a possibility of being true when it doesn't. God didn't die, and that's not the means to salvation. And it makes a distinction between Yahusha and the Torah when there is none. There is none. Absolutely no distinction between Yahusha and his Torah. They are the same. Again, while there is seldom any benefit from a short answer to questions regarding Yahweh and his guidance, Yahusha and the Torah are one. If you know the Torah, you know Yahusha. If you don't understand the Torah, you don't know who he is or why he came each of the six times he has visited with us. If you know Yahweh, you know Yahusha, because Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. If you don't know Yahweh, you do not know Yahusha. I mean, it's really that simple. The fixation on Yahusha, as if he is somehow different than the Torah, as if he is somehow different than Yahweh, as if he is a object of reverence and relationship, is just, you know, the term really is ignorant and irrational. And I don't say that in a demeaning way. I say that in a factual way. It's ignorant of what Yahweh said about himself, what he wants, what he's offering, how to engage and benefit from it, and his Torah. It's ignorant of that. And it's irrational to think that somehow there's a difference between the Torah and Yahusha. Particularly when you consider Yahusha's opening statement at the Sermon on the Mount. You know, at the heart of the issue is that Yahusha is a tiny representation of Yahweh, and thus we should not focus on him. He should not be the focus of your questions. Do as he encouraged and look to the Father. Now, it's important that you recognize, because I mentioned Yahusha's participation in Pesach, Passover, matzah and yeasted bread, Bukurim, firstborn children, and Shavua, the promise of seven Sabbaths, that these events, these four, first four mikrei, which were fulfilled in the fourth millennia, in the fourth year 4000 on Yahweh's calendar, 33 CE on our pagan Roman Catholic calendar, that those four Moed Mikre, invitations to meet with God and to be called out, to be welcomed into his presence, to read and recite what he has provided, that those four Mikre provide the benefits promised by the covenant in the Torah. Without Yahweh becoming the Passover lamb, without him providing the benefits of unyeasted bread, removing the fungus of religion and politics from our souls, without him enabling the benefits of Bakurim and being a firstborn child into Yahweh's covenant family. Without him, in conjunction with the set-apart spirit, facilitating the enrichment, which is teaching, guidance, which is what Torah represents, and empowerment, which is what the spirit provides, on the promise of the Shabbat, Shavua, then all of the promises that Yahweh made regarding the covenant are moot. He is fulfilling these, which means to honor them, to engage in them, to be responsible regarding them, to participate in them, to observe them, to enable all of these benefits for the covenant's children. So the bottom line here is, engage in the covenant. Answer Yahweh's invitations to meet with him. They work in harmony. And the process for benefiting from them and getting to know Yahweh in the first place is observing the Torah. The last paragraph of the letter reads as follows. Also, how should we be spending our time? I understand the importance of family, and that we need to work, and that our heart's desire is to fellowship with Yahweh. Do you believe that we are called to love those around us, care for the orphans and widows, teach others from the Torah and prophets? We have always believed in living a purposeful life and want to gain a better understanding since we've had such a huge shift in what we believe is the truth. Well, if you want to know how should we be spending our time, why would you ask me? I mean, really, why would you ask me? Why not look to the Torah and see, does Yahweh provide instructions as to how we should spend our time? Yeah, he does. He says that we should be observant. We should observe his Torah, which means to closely examine and carefully consider it. We should listen to what he has to say. It's our interest. You know, this idea we need to have a relationship with him, fellowship with him. That's the end result of being observant, of paying attention to what he has to say, listening to him. The best way to have a relationship with Yahweh is to pay attention and to be focused on what he has to say. Study the Torah. Consider the prophets and Psalms. That's how you should be spending your time. Share that with your children, first and foremost. Share that with your neighbors, second. Now, as it relates to sharing what we learn, Yahweh gives us those instructions. He says, you know, I want you to recite the Torah when you wake up in the morning. I'd like you to recite the Torah when you go to bed at night. I'd like you to post the Torah on the entrances to your homes. You know, think about the Torah. Make it your focus, to guide your actions. I mean, the Torah is Yahweh's guidance to his children as to how we should be spending our lives. You know, and most of it just comes from a realization that when you're part of Yahweh's covenant family, you need to act. You should. In fact, you don't need to act. You just naturally respond in a way that's consistent with being part of the Creator's family. You naturally want to share. You have to ask yourself, okay. This was kind of Yosha's frustration with the whole thing. Person after person said, you know, I can't see you to heal my sight. I can't walk you to make me walk. You know, I've got, you know, I'm dumb, I'm lame, I'm blind, I'm whatever. Could you fix my physical body? And he just constantly look at him and say, oh, come on. Here I am. I can resolve your eternal soul. I can enrich you. I can empower you. I can give you eternal life. I can perfect your soul as a living embodiment of the Torah. And you're asking me to fix an eye? You know, the disciples one day were talking about bread, and they said, oh, you know, we forgot to bring the bread. Thousand apologies. He said, I'm not talking about bread. God, if I wanted bread, don't you think I could make bread? You know, they're talking about the yeast of unyeasted bread and the purpose of matzah is religion and politics. I mean, think. So, yeah, you could go and feed an orphan. There's not a lot of them around. You know, most children that are available for adoption are adopted. There are more parents that want to adopt than there are children made available for adoption. But, you know, you want to go find an orphan? That's fine. You know, you want to go off and work in a soup kitchen and feed the hungry? Nothing wrong with that. It's a fine thing to do. But what do you think is going to be of more enduring benefit and value? The loaf of bread that you provide? Or an introduction to Yahweh? That was really the question, the underlying question that Yahusha was so bugged by. Humanity. And he says, listen, I'm going to heal the XYZ individual, but not because that's got significant merit or is somehow difficult to do, but because if I can demonstrate to you that I can fix the mundane, maybe you'll pay attention to the means that Yahweh devised to fix the eternal. And that's where it all comes together. You want to understand what to do? Be Torah observant. Closely examine and carefully consider the Torah. Listen to what Yahweh has to say. Respond to Him. Get to know Him. Live your life as a member of the covenant. Enjoy it. Party with Him. Celebrate with Him. God loves to have fun, and He loves learning.